You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus, here to bring you even more Chicago Bears free agent analysis. Today, we're going to catch up on the next wave of free agent signings the Bears have made. I will be joined by my friend Charles McDonald from Football Outsiders, Falcoholics. He's going to help us break down Taylor Gabriel, the newest Chicago Bears wide receiver, but we'll also touch on the new backup quarterback, Chase Daniel, the new kicker, Cody Parkey, and we'll go through a couple of the players that the Bears re-signed and try to look at what the future might hold for them. Let's start by updating you on the latest out of Chicago. As of Wednesday evening, the Bears officially released Mike Glennon, Marcus Wheaton, and Marcus Cooper, freeing up about $21 million. I'm not exactly sure if that increases when Mike Glennon signs his contract with the Arizona Cardinals, 2 years, $8 million. There's offset language that takes $2.5 million guaranteed away from the Bears and onto the Arizona Cardinals, assuming they finalize that deal. So that might add a little bit more. I'm not an expert on offset language in NFL contracts, but regardless, freeing up a lot of cap space with those guys, nothing too unexpected there. Three free agent busts from last year, out of the picture, out of Chicago, moving on to greener pastures. Ryan Pace did work to re-sign a few of his own Bears, though, over the last couple of days. Let's start with outside linebacker Sam Acho. The team made it official when the new league year started Wednesday afternoon, but I believe the deal had leaked Tuesday night via Sam Acho's brother, Emmanuel Acho. He ended up tweeting out about the deal. Sam got 2 years, $7.5 million with $3 million guaranteed. I think some of that is incentive-based to get him up to $7.5 million. Don't know exactly what the bare minimum is there, but for all intents and purposes, a pay raise for Sam Acho. You know, the last 3 years in Chicago, he's played on minimum salary contracts, less than $1 million, 1 year at a time. But this past season, 2017, he played the most snaps that he had in any of his 3 years. It was the second most snaps in a season since back when he was in the Arizona Cardinals, and he was one of their starters. He played like 1,000 snaps that year. I think he played around 600 this past year, and he had to with Pernell McPhee, a shell of his former self, and Willie Young getting hurt again. The Bears needed outside linebackers. Sam Acho stepped up to the plate, and the Bears rewarded him. You know, I think this last year was quietly his best in Chicago as a pass rusher. You know, Pro Football Focus tracks all sorts of pass rushing stats. They had him down as 3 sacks, 12 quarterback hits, and 13 quarterback hurries. And that 12 quarterback hits number is impressive. And when you think back over his games this past year, I do remember a lot of moments where he is just a step or two away from the quarterback. Quarterback lets go of the ball. He gets there and he knocks the quarterback to the ground. And maybe if he was a little bit more dynamic of an athlete, you'd see him get that sack. But regardless, 12 quarterback hits ties Von Miller this season. Von Miller had like double-digit sacks too, but it was like 12 hits put Sam Acho in like the top five. I mean, Khalil Mack had 13 hits. Sam Acho had 12. Clearly not on their level, but just interesting perspective on how close he was, how often, to the quarterback on and his pass rushes. But, you know, Sam Acho's not a guy that's really great in any aspect of his game. You know, I think maybe his coverage ability gets a little bit overrated because he does it a lot, but he's also not terrible in any area. He can rush the passer. He can step up against the run and hold down the edge pretty effectively, and he can drop back into coverage. He's a solid rotational piece at that outside linebacker position, and he is an important player on special teams, and it's good to see the Bears reward that with a nice multi-year contract. Nothing too expensive, but a nice little treat for him. The Bears also rewarded Prince Amukamara with a 3-year, $27 million contract. And as of the time of this recording, the actual guaranteed numbers haven't been released yet, so we don't know the full details on how much the Bears are locked in there, but if you've listened to Locked On Bears over the last season, you know how much of a fan I've been of Prince Amukamara. I really like the quality of play the Bears got out of him on that 1-year, $7 million deal. We went in depth with Ian Wharton from Bleacher Report on Fuller and Amukamara and some free agent cornerbacks back on February 21st. But Amukamara was a guy that just wasn't targeted too much, and that was a good thing. You know, he held down his side of the field, didn't allow big plays, didn't give up a ton of yards, didn't make a lot of big plays. He's never been a big interception guy, but he's just a solid number two cornerback who's good in coverage, holds up fine against the run. You know, with the Pro Football Focus numbers, he ranked top five and top 10 in coverage snaps per target, meaning for the number of snaps he's on the field, how often is he targeted, among the lowest in the NFL. I mean, he's among the best in not being targeted very often, not allowing catches very often, and not getting a lot of yards allowed per coverage snap. So it's easy to see on a per snap basis, he's not allowing a lot of catches, yards, or targets. That being said, as much as I like Prince Amukamara, it might surprise you that I'm actually not as high on this signing as you might think. You know, he hasn't played in a 16-game season since 2013. And that, for me, is tough to invest a 3-year deal in. You know, in 2017, this past year, he had that ankle injury in the preseason that held him out of the first two games. Then last year with the Jaguars, you know, before 2017, he missed a couple of games with a hamstring injury, missed a lot of time in 2015 with a pectoral injury. 2014, he ended up on IR with a biceps injury. You know, again, 2013 was that 16-game season. Before that, ankle and hamstring injuries. And his rookie year, he had a foot injury. There's a lot of risk in locking in a player with this type of injury history for a 3-year contract. And the guaranteed money will tell a lot, and we don't get to know that yet, but you have to imagine they're locked in for at least a year or probably two, and there's a lot of risk in that. You know, I really like what he's done when he's on the field. Ryan Pace has a bad history with investing in injury-prone players, and I'm just weary just a little bit about Prince Amukamara. For that reason only, no concerns about his play. While the Bears were busy retooling their offense and re-signing some of these key defensive players, the Green Bay Packers were actually getting pretty busy themselves, getting a lot of free agent action going up north there with their new general manager. It seems like there's a little bit of a new off-season philosophy for them. For an update on what the Chicago Bears division rivals have been up to this week, here is Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers here on the Locked On Podcast Network, bringing you up to date with the latest from behind enemy lines.
Tuesday was the biggest day in Packers free agency since Reggie White signed in Green Bay. New GM Brian Gutekunst signed 5-time Pro Bowler Jimmy Graham on the same day he released Jordy Nelson, arguably the best receiver in modern team history. Nelson's age and athleticism relegated him more to a red zone and third down possession threat coming off his ACL, production Graham could replicate. But Nelson's connection with Rodgers was unique, and there's no guarantees Graham can form the same type of bond with Rodgers. Jordy says he still wants to play and has a host of teams interested. He still has enough left in the tank to contribute to an offense so long as he doesn't have to be the top guy. As for the Packers, expect them to take a receiver with one of their top picks in the draft, and with Ted Thompson in the front office, they have a history of hitting in the second round.
Turning back to Bears free agency now, I think some Bears fans were weary about one of the other signings the Bears made in the last couple days here. They went out and signed Chase Daniel to be the backup quarterback, and I want to put it to rest now, Chase Daniel is singular. It's not Chase Daniels. It's Chase Daniel. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to continue to mess that up, but it is Chase Daniel, and he is the Bears' new backup quarterback. They signed him to a 2-year, $10 million contract, $7 million guaranteed. And the stat everybody points to is he has attempted 3 passes in the last 3 seasons. And so it's easy to be, well, why do the Bears give this guy $7 million guaranteed? Ha, 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 look at them. But he started 2 games for the Kansas City Chiefs, one in each 2013 and 2014. In those 2 games, I thought he was accurate. Hit a couple of deep shots down the right sideline. You know, nothing too notable in a positive or negative way. Seemed to just get the ball where it needed to be. Didn't take it over the top, but didn't, you know, hold the team back by any means. So Matt Nagy was the quarterback's coach for 2013 and 2014 and 2015. He knows Chase Daniel better than anyone. And for me, I mean, it's worth a shot. You know, at the end of the day, this is just your backup quarterback. And if Chase Daniel is taking the field, then that means something went horribly wrong with Mitchell Trubisky. And Daniel showed some ability to step in and perform at a decent level. So, you know, if Mitch goes down for 1 game, you might be okay with Chase Daniel. If he goes down for longer, the Bears have bigger problems to deal with anyway. So, you know, maybe, just maybe, Daniel still has some untapped potential here. Hasn't had an opportunity to really play much. And if he got that opportunity, he could do more. And if anyone knows that, it's Matt Nagy. So, you know, there aren't a lot of exciting backup quarterbacks. You know, there aren't a lot of guys that you think, oh man, he could do something. Most of the time it's, here's a veteran, and you know he's really average and he's only going to be average. Maybe there's more in Chase Daniel. Maybe there's not. But that maybe there's more is more than you can say about a lot of backup quarterbacks that aren't, you know, rookies. So, sure, I'll take it. Sign me up for 2 years of Chase Daniel. Probably an inconsequential move in the big picture, but there could be something interesting there. The opposite of something interesting there was the Bears signing Cody Parkey, the kicker of the Miami Dolphins. I'm not going to bore you with too much kicker talk here, but just real quick, Bears gave him 4 years, $15 million, with $9 million guaranteed. And that's actually a pretty decent percentage of them. I mean, that's almost 2/3 of the contract guaranteed, probably locked in for 3 years, and then the 4th one they can get out of. The Bears special teams coordinator, Chris Tabor, coached him in Cleveland with the Browns in 2016. That year, Cody Parkey hit 80% of his field goals, which is not amazing, but last year with the Dolphins, he was at 91.3%. I think he only missed 2 field goals all year, but he did miss 3 extra points, and I think at least 2 of those were actually missed. I don't know if 1 was blocked or if all 3 were missed, but I'm pretty sure at least 2 of them were straight up missed extra points. So weird that he was better on field goals than extra points, but hey, the bar is set pretty low after Connor Barth, Cairo Santos, and Mike Nugent in Chicago. So Cody Parkey is pretty much guaranteed to be an upgrade no matter what. And, you know, it's a $15 million deal over 4 years for a kicker. No big deal. Nothing to get too excited or too worried about. All of those moves, though, were pretty much small fries compared to the other wide receiver the Bears signed on Tuesday evening, Taylor Gabriel from the Atlanta Falcons. Gets a lot of people excited. He's bringing some speed to Chicago. Should be interesting to see how the Bears deploy him. You know, yesterday on Locked On Bears, we got a Jaguars perspective on Allen Robinson, and we got a Philadelphia Eagles perspective on Trey Burton. And so today, I want to dive in here to Taylor Gabriel and get an Atlanta Falcons perspective with my friend Charles McDonald. He is one of the brightest young football minds in the world of NFL media and Twitter. He was a speaker at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference this past week or a week or 2 ago. I mean, Charles knows his stuff, and he knows the Atlanta Falcons better than anyone, and he has always been a big fan of Taylor Gabriel. So who else better to come on the podcast to break down the newest wide receiver of the Chicago Bears? Joining me now on Locked On Bears is Charles McDonald. He is known as the guy at the airport that saw Andy Reid, as seen on ESPN by a few different people referring to him for Andy Reid's mac and cheese recipe. But he writes for Football Outsiders, Falcoholics, and Setting the Edge. He's one of the hosts of the Setting the Edge podcast as well. You can follow him on Twitter at 4verts. That's F-O-U-R-V-E-R-T-S. Charles, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Get to talk about one of my favorite players of the 2016 season for the Falcons, Taylor Gabriel, today. Because, you know, I think when you look at what they did in 2016, he was a pretty big part of their success. Like, I think he was the number one receiver in terms of DVOA that season, like the efficiency metric we use at Football Outsiders. So when he's used right, he's definitely a very talented, very explosive player. But, you know, he's kind of a guy that you have to set up in the right ways as well. You know, he's not going to be your guy that goes out there and be like, he's not going to go out there and be your Allen Robinson, which is fine. He doesn't need to be. But when he's like I said, when he's used the right way, even this year, you can go back and look at the Detroit game where they called the screen and he scored like a 40-yard touchdown on that. He's just a very, very explosive player with the ball in his hands.
Well, before we get specifically into some of his recent performances, take my listeners here through, generally speaking, what Taylor Gabriel is. You know, assume people haven't watched the Atlanta Falcons play. I mean, we know he's small, he's fast, and he's kind of a deep threat, but what type of a skill set does he have? What can he do and what can't he do, and how did the Atlanta Falcons use him?
I think the biggest thing with Gabriel is once he gets the ball in his hands, he can really he has the vision and the agility to really make people miss after the catch. And, you know, as a smaller guy, he's not going to be someone that goes up and, you know, catches deep balls over two defenders or something like that. But, and, you know, that's funny because the Falcons early in the season, they did throw a handful of deep balls to him where it was just not pretty. I mean, you know, he's a guy that maybe you kind of have to manufacture him being open. But if he's on one-on-one coverage, like there was a play in the Super Bowl versus Malcolm Butler where he just kind of shook him on a double move up the seam. And, you know, if you can get him matched up in one-on-one coverage, he can win that way. But I think the biggest way you're going to get him to win is by setting up screens for him, setting up, you know, jet sweeps and handoffs for him where you can get the ball in space, and then he's just going to use that 4-2 speed and the agility and ball carrier vision that he has to make those big plays.
Now, when he came to the Atlanta Falcons from the Browns a couple years ago, and he was still only 24. I mean, he's still only, what, like 26, going to turn – or 27, just turned 27. You know, when he came to the Falcons, young, speedy, electric receiver, had that big 2014 year as a rookie and then fell off a little bit, you know, as a lot of Browns players have in the past. When he came to Atlanta, what were your expectations for what he could do in their offense? And do you think he met those expectations or exceeded them or didn't quite reach them?
Oh, I think he exceeded them. Just because I really didn't have any expectations for him, because when he got to Atlanta, I want to say he got added to the roster during the preseason that year. So I wasn't really expecting much. You know, they already had Julio, Sanu, and I guess Justin Hardy in the fold. But once Taylor Gabriel, he already knew the offense, obviously, because he had played in it under Kyle Shanahan, like you said, when he had his rookie season. But once they started figuring out how to get him into the flow of the game, I mean, he just made some unbelievably explosive plays. I posted on my Twitter account yesterday one of the touchdowns he had versus Arizona in 2016, where they set it up perfectly, and the Cardinals were running a cover zero blitz, and they called a screen right behind it. So you really don't have anyone on the back end that's in coverage that can make a play on him. So it was amazing to see, first of all the blockers were matched up one-on-one with the defenders and guys that were able to get away from the blockers. He just made a miss, and he juked like six guys out on the field on his way untouched to like a 40-yard touchdown, which is just the playmaking ability that he brings. But I think in 2017, Sarkisian just didn't really know how to get Gabriel involved with the flow of the game. So that really kind of screwed up his 2017. But even then, he was still able to make some good plays for them. I just think it's going to take a guy who's a little bit more creative than Sarkisian in order to really get his whole, skill set out in the field. And I think Nagy is definitely a guy that he's shown the ability to produce offense with you know, maybe some smaller guys. I don't think Gabriel's explosive as Tyreek Hill in the deep passing game or anything, but he's still more than a capable player to get deep and burn guys. And it's just all about him being a nice little role piece to the offense instead of being your main guy.
Again, we're talking Taylor Gabriel here with Charles McDonald on Locked On Bears.
So after the Bears sign somebody like Allen Robinson, you know, they bring in back Cameron Meredith, everyone in Chicago that doesn't really know much about Taylor Gabriel, they instantly assume he is the slot guy because he's going to be number three. He didn't really play the slot that much in Atlanta. They seemed to like him outside. He did some slot in Cleveland, but it just even generally speaking here, not even necessarily specific to Gabriel, like in your opinion, what is the dynamics there of what kind of guy you want in the slot and what kind of guy you want outside? And how do you think Taylor Gabriel should be used?
Yeah, I think in terms of that, it's just a preference. I mean, I kind of like these big slot receivers in the mold of a Sanu, where, you know, they can make catches over the middle and then they have the power to kind of run through contact in terms of linebackers and safeties coming down. I kind of like that because I just feel like it's a little bit more. I don't have any scientific or mathematical research to back this up, but I feel like when you have those big slot guys that can break tackles in the middle of the field, that feels like a little bit more sustainable than some of these smaller guys that you have to rely more on speed. I mean, that's just, again, personal preference. But, you know, Gabriel, he made it work from the slot quite a bit, but he's a guy, he has like the route running ability to play outside. It's just a matter of when it comes down to him needing to win at the catch point, that's just not going to be what he does. And, you know, whether it's in the slot, outside, even you have a 5'7", 5'8" guy, that's just not going to be a guy that's going to win at the catch point, make difficult, contested catches. So I think that if you can find him a ways to get the ball in space, either outside or inside, that's probably the best way you got to use him. And just to give Gabriel some credit too, he is good at creating his own space in terms of route running. He's got a good feel on how to get loose in the screen game when the play is called right. So he's a really good player. He's got a level of craftiness to his own game, but overall, I think you need the right offensive mind to exploit him. But if you do have the right offensive mind, he can be an extremely dangerous weapon for you out of the backfield, in the middle level of the field, and especially on the screen game.
Well, he did have the right offensive mind in that 2016 season, like you mentioned, had, I think, 579 yards and 6 touchdowns and 16.5 yards per reception.
Yeah, and he only had 50 targets that season.
Yeah.
So when you put it in that context, it's fairly absurd.
Where do you think, then, his ceiling is? Because, you know, is he a guy you'd think that if you keep giving him more and more targets, that he might not be able to sustain quite right. That efficiency in his production. But, you know, is that 600 yards, 6 touchdowns, 16.5, 17 yard per catch type range his ceiling? I mean, especially when you're looking at him potentially being the third receiver in the offense, or how much more do you think they could get out of him realistically?
I think that 2016 season was probably his peak, which is a pretty significant peak to have. I feel like if you're going to get 50 targets and turn it into that amount of production, that's incredible. So, you know, if you can get that as his peak, and really when you look at that in terms of efficiency, that's like borderline number two, like a wide receiver two, in terms of stats. So, you know, I think that's probably his peak. If you can get somewhere around that range this year, you're probably very, very happy with the signing. I certainly do think he need to be more productive than he was last year. I think last year was just Sark just didn't really have a good feel on how to use him, and that's pretty much it. But I'm happy for Taylor Gabriel. He's a really nice guy. A funny story was I remember it was during the 2016 season. I was just tweeting out some clips of him, and he was like, he gave me his phone number so I could text him the clip so he could save it to his computer. Like, and then we just kind of been mini friends since then. So he's a really nice guy, really cool guy. And, you know, I'm rooting for him. I think you guys got a great player.
Do you think the 4-year 26 can be up to $28 million contract? Is that a little rich for your blood, or do you think his potential and sort of the production he's been able to have in high-powered offense makes it worth that? It's in the context of the free agent market, or is that, does that surprise you that he got that much?
I was a little bit surprised just because he had a down year last year, but I guess if you look at it in the context of what he can be, it's if he does fulfill that 2016 season or have seasons close to it, then you're not really bothered by that contract at all, I feel like.
It's easy to look at Gabriel and see, you know, listed at 5'8" and 167 and clearly undersized, but has there ever been durability issues with that? I mean, it seems like he's been able to take hits and bounce back up, but in terms of, you know, nagging things that have hurt him, you know, has there been much of that, or has he been a guy that's stayed on the field pretty consistently?
No, I think he only missed maybe one game in his career with the Falcons. I think he just had like a nagging hamstring injury at one point last season, but other than that, I don't really remember him being a guy that was durable and banged up or anything like that. So I would not be concerned about that at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like 2016 he had a concussion for a game and a foot injury for a game, but nothing too severe, at least on the Pro Football Reference injury report. But good to know that he's not vulnerable with his small size.
Yeah, because we talk about how running quarterbacks need to be good at avoiding big hits, but I feel like you can look at undersized receivers in the same way, and I think that's definitely an area that Gabriel excels in. He's never going to let himself take a big shot because I think he knows that would just kind of ruin things for him. So he's really good about avoiding the big hits and keeping himself healthy.
Is there anything, like any one thing in particular you're going to remember most about Gabriel's time in Atlanta? I mean, is there anything specific that stands out to you as sort of the, you know, the overarching moment or just play or any kind of event that happened with Gabriel that will really stick with you from him?
The two plays, the play versus the Cardinals that I was talking about where, I mean, I actually wrote about it for the Falcoholic last summer where he just juked out like seven guys on his way to a touchdown. And then the play in the Super Bowl where he just made Malcolm Butler fall to the ground with the double move on a route. I mean, when he's at his peak and he's really feeling himself, he's just an incredible player to watch. So I really hope you guys get the full Taylor Gabriel experience. He's a great guy, great taste in music. So I'm rooting for him.
Well, thanks for giving us the Charles McDonald experience and letting us in here on what the Taylor Gabriel experience was like. Do you want to let my listeners know one more time where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your football analysis?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at 4verts. You can find me at Football Outsiders. I have a Maurice Hurst article coming up. It's supposed to go up today, but I didn't finish it, so it's probably going to go up tomorrow. And you can find stuff from the Falcoholic. So really around this time for the Falcoholic, I just kind of do draft stuff for them. So once I finish up my spreadsheet with the players that the Falcons are probably going to be interested based on the combine, I'm going to have a post up about that probably early next week. So yeah, that's all I got.
All right, Charles, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, boss.
Thanks again to Charles McDonald for joining us to break down one of his favorite wide receivers, Taylor Gabriel. If you enjoyed our talk, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and keep coming back more. We're going to continue to bring the free agent analysis all this week. Like Locked On Bears on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Bears. And there's always more Chicago Bears talk on my Twitter at Cox Sports One. We'll keep breaking down the free agency news this week as they come in. And then when that starts to cool off a little bit, it will get right into NFL draft season. We will be your draft destination. After being your free agent destination, come to Chicago Bears podcasts. You got to keep it locked on Locked On Bears, and always bear down.